Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Pelican, built tough for all situations. Go to pelican.com. Yak Gadget, for all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. Eastport Marina, on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake, for all your lodging, kayaking, and fishing needs, go to eastport.info. Now let's get this show started.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to The Reel Down. What up, Dan?
What's going on, man?
You know, trying to clean up a mess I made right before we started. Make sure my computer doesn't catch on fire.
Well, yeah. I like the Trash Panda shirt, by the way. That's such a
good name. I heard his name for the first time today. I didn't know what they had named him. They call him Sprocket. Like Space Rocket. I'm assuming that's about it. For anybody that's listening, don't know what we're talking about. I live in towards Huntsville. Our baseball team is the Rocket City Trash Pandas. So I am wearing a shirt of a raccoon in a trash can running around. So shout out Josh Eldridge. We miss you, Trash Panda.
Yeah. But dude, what you been up to this week? Anything new? Crazy?
I got in a bass boat again. That was odd. It actually wasn't even conventional bass boat. It was actually a crappie boat, and it was a stick steer boat that you drive from the front. So it was weird. But it's like the kayaker's boat in the fact that it's aluminum. And like we just ran that bad boy up all the creeks we kayak fish. And when you run out of water, you can float. We just shoved it in the bank and then went wading. It was awesome. I had a great time. We were out there with all the elites on Pickwick. Yeah. Kind of. We saw a lot of the elites on Pickwick. But we averaged up what we caught, and we would have done all right fishing shallow. We would have, that was day two, we would have probably been like middle to bottom of the pack. So not too bad.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk to these guys, but it's still kind of in between where they're not all the way deep. They're kind of that in-between stuff, but still a lot you can catch on the bank and shallow.
So. You know, John Cox did John Cox things and went up to Bay Springs and caught them shallow all week.
That's right.
It was cool to see all the other pros with, you know, 30 rods on the deck, and he had two spinning reels and one bait caster. He's the guy that gives me faith to stop fucking around with all this deep water stuff I don't know and just fish shallow, because the dude can just make it work. Like, they were making jokes like he probably doesn't know what live scope is, and I was like, I could be that guy. Well, that's not what we're here to talk about, even though we probably could talk about it all day. But we've got a couple of great guests in the background with us. We are covering the Hobie BOS on Chickamauga, on top of all the other events that were going on in Chickamauga at the same time. But without further ado, we've got the winner, Justin Pat, or I think I got it right. Justin won, right?
Yeah.
Before I say it wrong. Yeah, I thought so. Justin Patrick as the winner, and second place, Ethan Jett. What's going on, guys?
Hey, guys.
And we also invited on Christine, but she had some conflicting stuff on Monday and Tuesday where we couldn't get her on. We have to have the show in by Tuesday night. So we'll have her on again for too long.
Cool.
But yeah, thank you all for being on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us.
I was pretty sure you won, Justin, because I knew that you put out like a ridiculous number. But I remember seeing a post about like last minute upsets, and I could not remember if that was from this event, and I just missed it. But because I try not to listen to the KBN show, so that like what we do is natural with you, like any guests we have that we double up on. So I literally don't listen to it so this is all fresh.
But at first, I wasn't sure if you were confused with the name, because a lot of people just call me Patrick. I got, you know, the two first names. So,
I mean, I was just like, I didn't want to like open that wound if maybe Ethan had squeaked around you and I just missed it. And I was like, wait a minute, hold on. Let me read it real quick. So
there was no squeaking around him.
Nope. I didn't think so. I remember when I checked the standings, I was like, holy shit. Yeah.
Well, yeah, here, we'll go ahead and go over the numbers on day one. Justin led it wire to wire. J- Justin with 97.5, and Ethan, you were down in ninth with 89.25. Adam Reiser in third with 92.25. Christine, 91.75. And then day two, Justin again, biggest bag of the tournament, 102.75, which is crazy. Second place, Jimmy Davis, 93.75. Matt Ball in third, 92.75. Ethan, you were in sixth. You had two great days. And then total, Justin first with 200.25. Ethan, 180.5. Christine with 179.25. Josh Stewart in third, fourth with 178.5.
And put Matt a whole Ball, fish distance on those guys. Yeah. That's sick.
Matt Ball with 176.5, and my teammate Jordan with 176.25. So, yeah, great numbers. And it looks like a lot of people caught fish too. It wasn't one of those deals where, you know, like half the field caught zero. A lot of people caught them. I mean, I say that, but then I look halfway up at 100 was. Or at 100 was 113.75. So it was, I guess it was in between based on other tournaments. Some tournaments like really feast or famine. This one was okay.
But man, this was a classic. This was a classic TVA tournament. Either live or die on a ledge. Yeah. Or you can go shallow. So.
And there were some guys that caught some really good fish up shallow too.
I had some buddies that all week. I had some buddies that fished there were multiple other events going on during all that, one day events that hammered them on in shallow the first day and are kicking themselves for not even, you know, it's hard to get in because of the sellout and then the waiting list and all that, but they never even tried. And
yeah,
you know, Chickamauga is one of those lakes that you're always like a couple of casts away from being on the fish like Justin was. So,
well, Ethan, we'll start with you, man. Never been on. Tell everybody who you are.
Let's say I'm Ethan Jett. I'm 24. I live in Lewisburg, Tennessee. And this is my first year fishing Hobie. I've fished two events so far, and this is my first time ever finishing in the money in the Hobie event. I just started. My whole game plan leading into it was to fish shallow, live or die, shallow bite, and I know most people was going to be fishing deep on the ledges, TVA in June. You got to think ledge fishing. And I knew all the boat traffic. And so I was like, go shallow. And I was really fortunate to have a place that held big fish both days. I caught my first fish on day one was a 22.5 stud of a fish. And
see, for me, that's usually when I know it goes downhill from there. Yeah. Like it's like bam, gone, and then it's just.
And where are you at? Are you at a paddle shop?
I'm actually at Rogue Fishing. This is my work.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh, you work with Mark?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, wow, cool. Yeah.
Well, if Mark's still there, hi, Mark. Supervisor.
He's already left for the day.
Lazy bastard.
Well, yeah.
There's a good plug. Tie your shit up so you won't lose it. But isn't that what Josh Smith used to say?
Yeah.
Well,
I about that too. I don't tie anything down.
Oh, dude, I've lost a phone, man. If you're one of those people who haven't lost one yet, get a Tether, Rogue, or whoever you want. I mean,
I lost one and found it and still haven't started tethering it because I'm stupid.
See, now that you said that, Dan, I got to go get one. That's like, you know, the calling sign. Like, you better go get one now or the next tournament you're going to lose your phone.
It's going to happen a bit. You know, it's just one of those things like, I was so good about it for years. I went without using one. Everybody, a Tether. And I'm like, I don't want this deal on me. But then one time I like set it on my board for some reason, like under my seat. And then I pulled out the board and the phone was on it and went out. And
When I lost mine, I had my Tether, like my Tether was attached and I had popped it out because I was literally coming to the bank. And I was standing up in my kayak and I hit a freaking submerged rock and it just like ejected me out. And I landed like halfway in the water, halfway on the bank with my pocket open on my PFD. And when I got to my truck and I was like, underwater for an hour and a half before I found it. Still have the same phone. Still works perfectly. Go iPhone.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
I will literally check the depth sometime to say, yeah, I could swim that deep. You know, if I need to.
It's cool. I'll just get out.
Yeah.
Well, Justin,
the boat might be down the river, but
tell everybody who you are, man.
Yeah, man. So Justin Patrick from Memphis, Tennessee area, West Tennessee. And, you know, got started in kayak fishing about 7 years ago, grassroots level. Fished my whole life, mostly bank fishing. Honestly, getting into kayak fishing was really my first time getting in a boat and getting off the bank. Just didn't kind of grow up in that fishing family per se. Yeah. So it's been an adventure, man. I've always loved adventure. Kayak fishing, man, it just takes you all kinds of crazy places and stuff. Like, you know, flooded ramps in the back of Sam Rayburn somewhere, you know, but you know, it's awesome, man. I love the sport. I've just had a ball doing it. It just being in these little tiny boats, something about it just kind of takes me back to my youth. I'm 35, so I'm not, you know, too old yet, but you know, the bones are starting to hurt a little bit here and there. but yeah, man, just love it. Love the sport.
What clubs do y'all fish with in Tennessee?
So they got the whole CAST organization, Kayak Angler Society of Tennessee. And, the one I fish with is West Tennessee Bass Yakkers. And, Ethan, you got one out that way you fish with too?
Yes, sir. I fish with, Kayak Bass Fishing Tennessee.
KBFTN. Good club.
Yeah.
There's like, what, 11 clubs in Tennessee?
There's 12 in the CAST.
Y'all are blessed with a great organization there.
Man, they do it really good. Past few years, Steve and Daniel, yeah. Man, they put on a heck of a show. Well, each year it's designated to a different club to put on the state championship. But man, every time you get together, everybody knows each other. You know, all shaking hands, telling stories and stuff. It's a good time.
Is that the Iron Man deal or is that TVKA? It must be them. Their championship is like a 2-day, 48-hour deal where you can fish any part of. I always thought that was the coolest tournament. I mean, my wife wouldn't, it'd be tough for me to go all weekend. I'm so hardcore. I'd be out there 20 hours a day, but yeah, I always thought that tournament was like, whoever wins that really, really earns it. You know,
I feel like it gives a big advantage. Yeah. It gives a big advantage to the night fishermen. Cause I don't, that time of year from like now until state championships time, night fishing is just, yeah. I don't even care about the moon phase half of it. Night fishing is just way more productive.
Yeah. Now with CAST, what's cool is they you fish the morning time, so from 6 to 2:30 on what is it, Friday, I think, and then Saturday you fish the evening. Your lines in is like 10 or 11, and you fish to like 7 or 8, and then you have the award ceremony on Sunday. So you kind of get, you know, a little bit of best of both worlds. You know, the morning bite, evening bite. So It creates a new set of challenges, you know, when you're, you know, in practice and just kind of planning for the tournament, you know, how you're going to tackle it. So, and then you just take your best five from both days. So it's just five fish total, you know, your best five from both days. So it's pretty neat. I mean, you can, you know, like a buddy of mine, he slept in Sunday morning, went to Waffle House and went out and got on a spot on chicken and got second place. So he didn't catch a fish on Friday. But
I'd love to have that kind of luck. Just don't work out. I mean, you can't talk. You put a beating on these guys. You have that luck. You are that luck. We need to like shake hands or like give me some of that blessing or something. Got a lucky hat you're wearing I can buy from you or something.
I'll send you one, man. I'll send you some shavings off my boat. I keep losing plastic off of it somehow.
Hey, I'll glue it right on the bottom of mine because I have the same problem.
What kind of boats are y'all in?
I'm in a Hobie PA 14 180 drive, so
yeah,
reliable
except 360. Yeah. I've fished 180s up until this year. wasn't real sure if I wanted to go 360, but kind of glad I did. I would say that it's not like a must have, but it's definitely nice, you know, especially in current and stuff like that.
That's way our kayak shop. I work for Music City Outdoors over there in Nashville, and when people are trying to decide whether they want to spend that extra money, and you know, I tell them it's, you know, the 180 drive did so good for so long, like it's not that not worth it, but no, it's great boats.
Yeah.
Well, whichever one of y'all want to, for people who's listening not familiar with it, someone give me or give us and everybody a breakdown of Lake Chickamauga.
What was it? You won't go, Justin? You can't.
Well, how many times have you been there? I've only been there three, so.
I've been there. I go about three times a year. I have a love-hate relationship with that lake.
Everybody does.
I do. Yeah, tell us about that, Nathan.
Well, you know, in June, the ledge bite is typically what wins tournaments. But as we are in a kayak, you can't run start your 250 up and run 2-3 miles down to the next ledge and so on. So it's hard to find a good ledge bite in a kayak. So that's why I devoted all my time to shallow. And I think Justin's the only one in the top 10 to have fish on a ledge all tournament.
did Christine, I think she fished ledges. I'm not sure. No,
she fished shallow, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, did she? Okay. Yeah.
So what's the shallow setup like? You know, grassy areas, long flats, lots of points, backwaters.
Yeah, a lot of flats. That's what I was targeting all weekend. You know, was it the bluegill spawn is going full, and then we're just now starting to get in the mayfly hatch.
Yeah. So I see a whole bunch on Neely Henry this weekend. It was
They're both
They hatched hard on Saturday on Pickwick. Or Friday, I think it was, at Pickwick. They were everywhere.
Yeah. Do you live out around Pickwick, Jimmy?
Close. I live right off of Wheeler Lake. So
okay.
It's 45 minutes to Pickwick, 45 minutes to Gunnersville, you know, 20 minutes to Wilson. I live like I'm right in the great spot for this section of river.
It's right on the other side of the border.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought you guys were based out of up north somewhere.
A lot of Paddle and Fin guys are Midwest, but we're both Alabama. I'm down in Hoover, like south of Birmingham. Yeah,
sweet, man.
Hey, yeah, he's closer to Coosa River Fisheries. I'm right off of TVA, but I'm only about an hour from like Smith Lake. So
you're right there in the midst of it, man.
Like I've literally like some of my buddies, they're like, why do you travel? Like there's no reason, and they're right because I do way better around here. I don't know why I go anywhere.
I'd love to, like, if I can move my wife to North Alabama, that's where I'd be too. I love it up there.
That's
yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to throw in what I thought was interesting about Chick compared to some of the other Tennessee River lakes is like some of the big pockets and stuff are a lot different. Like Pickwick and Kentucky, like you have these massive, wide open, coves and creeks that you can go up in, but a lot of with Chick you got a lot of real small narrow creek channels that just open up into these wide and embayments that turn into big flats. I've always kind of looked at that as kind of a challenge, a different set of challenges to like Pickwick and stuff like that. I don't know, Ethan, maybe you might can weigh in on that, but I've kind of all looked at it like they're just kind of like funnels that just it funnels them out there a little bit faster.
It does. You got those big grass flats in the middle of the channels, and it's just it funnels them. I can agree with you.
I haven't ever been to Chick, but looking at it on the map, that's exactly that. Like I'd rather fish the flats and like pinch points and stuff like that. And that definitely is something that I don't see as much on Pickwick because most of your, like you're saying, it's either big open bay area or it's like you go from ledge to back of creek very fast. And I can honestly say I've never really like caught them like funneling in or out. They're either back there or out in deeper water. And that is tough.
It says a lot about Chick that it's so pressured, but you still will catch 200 inches in 2 days. It's crazy. There's always a 200 boat tournament leaving out of somewhere.
Yeah.
It shows that the conservation, like the fishing game, take care of their water. I mean, that's the same reasons Texas lakes are, like OHIV saw, 12 teeners this year in a week and a half, 5 million people on that lake and still putting out just giant bags of fish.
And just,
I think it's got a lot.
It just has such great habitat too.
That's it.
Especially Chick and Gunnersville, grass, good bait.
That grass is key, man. That's.
Yeah.
If they'd stop spraying Gunnersville, it'd be fantastic.
Are they spraying Gunnersville?
They hit parts of it again. We went, it was like a month ago. little hot spot my buddy's got. The grass was up, like already up and beautiful compared to anywhere else you went on the lake. You know, we fished it like two separate weeks. It was fantastic. Went back there 2 weeks later. He sent me a picture of it. It looked like a dead brown mud hole. Everything was had died. And the only thing I've ever seen do that spring. So, yeah.
Well, that's what I'd seen some of that in practice on, you know, Wednesday and Thursday at Chick. And I was really, it was kind of discouraging me because, you know, of course that happened to Kentucky Lake. They sprayed off all the grass and stuff. And I started seeing all that brown grass in areas that guys have done really well in the past, you know, Cody Milton, mm-hmm. some other guys that have sat on these spots, you know, they're just grass humps and stuff. And everything that I was seeing on those spots was dead and brown. I was like, man, this better not be the whole lake.
Yeah.
It's going to suck.
But. So Ethan, you want to tell us about your practice, man?
Was it, I got there Wednesday morning and, went to this spot, the big grass flat that I actually fished both days in the tournament. And, I got back in there and there was three boats fishing the same stretch. I was like, gosh, can't believe this. So I started to do what I do best, skip a bad boy jig up under a dock, and bam, a 19 and a half. Went to the next dock that was shallower with more grass, caught another one that was equal to that size. I'm like, I'm getting out of here. And so that was day one. Went about as good as you think you could. And after that, I struggled all. I went offshore, couldn't find anything. Went back shallow to different areas, nothing. And I was like, I really didn't want to go back to where I went because I know that area, and it's a very popular spot. It's one of the most pressured spots. And I tried and tried to find something else, and I could never do it. So I just went with it.
Just because you mentioned that you checked offshore, are you got a live scope set up?
No, sir. No, that's going to be added to the kayak here soon.
Don't do it.
Just because we're on, I wanted to bring the topic up, and it was a big topic, you know, on the pro side of things all week of Pickwick. Do you think that could be a major player of not being able to compete with people that do have it, or do you think it's just an extra tool that you could use to your arsenal?
I think it's just an extra tool that you can use to find them.
Yeah.
And you can't get them to bite. It actually, I know a couple of friends that have it, and it makes them more frustrated when they can see them.
I got to use it for the first time this weekend, and I definitely, like, when you look down, you're like, fish.
Yeah.
For sure, a bunch of fish. I still can't catch the damn things. But like my buddy that it was on his boat was pointing it out. He was like, well, if anything, you can eliminate water. Like,
yeah.
You could be like, ooh, that looks like a good spot. Nope, never mind. Nothing there.
That would be the only way I would use it, is just a tool to be able to cover more water more efficiently.
That was us. We couldn't, like, I guess it's just because you're so used to doing things one way. Yeah. Like, we would turn it, and you'd see the fish, but we'd never look down at it and, like, you know, watch the bait, or like, we didn't do any of that. We would, like, I probably would have had a cool catch that we could have recorded. I was fishing a deep diving crankbait on a bridge and got just smoked, and it ended up being like a 15-pound catfish. And I guarantee you, it went right across life scope. We never looked down at it. I'm sure it would have looked, you know, like a whale going by that little camera. But
Justin, how about you?
So practice thought process was pretty similar to Ethan's. You know, I was, you know, kind of torn on the ledge deal, same reasons. You know, it's challenging and not always promised that you're going to find, you know, multiple schools that are willing, you know, that are fired up, willing to bite and stuff like that in close proximity. You know, and I've had the experiences where you're paddling out to a spot, and then here comes a bass boat that just beats you.
And they beat you too. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's the most frustrating for me.
It is.
Trying to ledge fish, yeah.
And that has happened to me quite a few times on Chick. You know, I mean, Pickwick too. I fish that a lot. But so, you know, just knowing that, knowing it's 1st of June, I'm just like, man, you know, I want to be out there. You know, that's my jam. I love to do that. But I just, you know, I it's kind of been a weird spring. You know, we've kind of had some cooler weather that's, you know,
a little late.
Prolonged. And I kind of felt like, you know, I could maybe get up there and target some bluegill spawning, and you know, there might still be a little bit of a shad spawn and the mayfly hatch, all that kind of stuff, you know, just kind of keeping some of those. And I know chick has got a lot of grass in it, you know, so you know, you can always catch them up shallow, you know, out there on chick. Same on Pickwick, but you know, started on Wednesday. My thought was like, well, I'm just going to spend 3 days scanning, and if I don't find what I'm looking for, then I'll go fish shallow and just cover a lot of water. And so started out at the Chickamauga Dam, you know, looking at some deeper stuff, just kind of some more kind of off the wall ledges, not really the big honey holes, and just kind of made my way up the river. And then, you know, it was Friday, last hour and a half. So, you know, Hobie, that, you know, they shut off practice at 4 on Friday, and it was like 2:30. I was sitting there looking at this spot. I'm like, man, should I put in or should I just go to the house? Well, you know, and decided to put in, motored out with my motor guide, and you know, got on a spot, and it was, you know, still a community call. And I mean, it's hard to get around those, you know, because they're community holes for a reason.
Yeah, ledge fishing specifically, like,
yeah,
like you look at it from any angle, like that's, I'm trying to think of how they put it when I was watching the elites, but it was like 90% of fish and 10% of the area. So obviously everyone's going to be on those 10% areas.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sets up that way a lot. I mean, a lot of these places, they're not secrets. I mean, you know, you got some anomalies, like, yeah, I've seen like how the one that Greg Hackney won on Pickwick, he found like an off the wall, you know, school just piled up in a creek ditch, you know?
Love that spot too. Yes. Talking about. I love that area.
I triangled that one.
I think that's the same area that that Lester was fishing this weekend in the Elite Series, right?
It's where he started.
Was it?
Is it? Oh,
yeah. He would start there, and he'd have his limit within the first 45 minutes, and he would already have like 17 pounds, and then he'd leave it.
Yeah, that ledge all along that area. I love that whole area.
Yeah, that's a good spot.
I'm glad you brought that up. The man knows his bass history here. I like it.
I study these ledge tournaments, man. I love them. But
Because you were talking about that, you know, like the pressure, I noticed, again, back to boat guys, more of them like being okay with guys coming in with them to like Brandon Polinick, like somebody rolled up and was like, you care if I jump in? He's like, sure, maybe you can help me get this school fired up. Do you think that it could be like that? Or obviously I doubt we'd ever see the boats let us roll up with them, because most of those guys just don't like us for some reason. But like if you rolled up and Ethan was out there, do you think you could use that mentality? Like maybe we both can just get these guys fired up? Or do you think your strength is just kind of hitting it by yourself?
You know, guy like Ethan, I would say, yeah, come on in, you know.
Yeah, come on, shallow water guy.
Yeah, I won't catch one.
No, he's a cool dude, man. But no, I've heard that too. I haven't actually used that tactic with somebody. You know, like, hey, pedal way over here 2 miles. You know, they might be like, yeah, I'm good on that, bro. You know, I'm going to save my leg. But no, I definitely know what you're talking about. And I've seen the elites, you know, do that as well. But man, you know, that takes, you know, a tight knit group of people that know each other and stuff for that to work. Cause you know, I mean, talking about, you know, history, you know, on chick, when Ike and Ellie rolled up on KVD, he was like, bro, you have not been over here.
This is a community hole. You're not part of this community.
Yeah. You haven't been here, Ike. So, you know, I don't know about that.
It's funny. On Low Budget Live today with Luke Duncan, this week's episode, he was talking with Swindle about the same thing, how, you know, we see people do it, and it's, they don't know all the behind the scenes stuff of how they might already have something worked out. Of, he hates that people think they just roll up on each other and it's cool, because it's usually not. And they either have, you know, they either edit it out, or, you know, if you're watching the hour long show, not the live, but they might, you know, they know other people, they know what's cool and what's not, they have an agreement. But some people get there. There's a whole big topic we're getting into, but a lot of that stuff is so disrespectful. But some of it too is like somebody posted on KBN something. If you're fishing a bridge or like a known community hole, you have to know what you're, I mean, you know, you have to expect some respect, but also you have to know what you're fishing. If you're fishing that something somebody else is going to get on, you can't own a bridge. You know?
Yeah, Brian knew went into the etiquette of that. Like, there's certain places you know it's going to happen, but please have the common courtesy. Like, don't troll straight through me. Like,
yeah. Don't cross.
Come around me. He's like, come around me and spot lock and touch boats with me. As long as you don't drive straight over it, that's fine. Yeah. Like, I get it.
Yeah. Don't blow out my spot in front of me. But you know, there's definitely a right and wrong way to approach that. But you don't. Some places you just don't own. You know.
Yeah.
Public landowner, baby.
Yeah. But So if you had a good practice, you found something offshore, kind of a community hole. How do you rig up for that? Because it seems from a boat, like I came from a boat where I could have 20 rods and I would have, you know, the hair jig, the big shaky, the big spoon, the football jig, the swim bait, the whatever it is, where I just have all these baits I can rotate through, and then I can go, you know, have a little milk run where I'm going from spot to spot to spot, and then just trying to see, you know, just trying to find the active fish. Yeah. How do you do that in it from a kayak and be successful? I haven't figured that out yet. This is like real. I'm really asking this.
No,
please,
yeah.
Tell me the secret.
Dude, I went out rigged up with 12 rods, honestly. Okay. So in practice, you know, I was throwing one of my favorite baits in the summer is the Strike King 8-inch bullworm. I can't say how many big fish I've caught on that thing. I love the Zoom Old Monster, but something about that tail, I think in the way it falls, it just kind of like does a number like that. It's a great.
It's real thick. Like it's got more mass to it.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's a great bait for flipping in lily pads and grass like that too. I've done that numerous times, but I was throwing that a lot, man, in practice, and they were just kind of nipping at it, you know.
Jimmy's writing it down.
Right.
Bullworm. Sorry.
Bullworm, man. That's a good deal.
I'm a 10-inch Berkeley power bait worm guy, power worm. Okay. But I'm always up to try something new.
Yeah. But you know, I just think, you know, it sounds cliche, but, you know, you just let the fish tell you what they want. And, you know, it seemed like they weren't really wanting a lot of dragon stuff on the bottom. And really the spot that I was fishing kind of demanded a vertical presentation. So I had a drop shot rigged up, surprisingly, you know, and threw in there, man, they just started biting it. So, you know, I went into the tournament Saturday, you know, fully expecting and prepared to throw the drop shot. But still took everything with me because, you know, day to day, it can change. So yeah. I've been in that situation where I'm like, yeah, I'll leave that rod in the truck or at the hotel. And then I get out there, I'm like, dang it. That rod, you know, where is
that's
it?
That's how I feel about my frog rod anywhere. I don't care if I'm fishing in the middle of the freaking ocean. If I don't have my frog rod with me, I will find a reason to have it. Like, oh, damn, he would have bit that frog. You know, I don't know. That's like I took it with me this weekend. My buddy was like, we're going out on the ledges. What are you going to do with that? And I was like, shit, I don't know. You never know.
You never know.
It's right. Like, if the ledge bite don't work, we're going frog fishing. And we actually did. So,
so what? Did you think it was vertical because how they were setting up? Was it like they were suspended off the bottom a foot or two, or are you just that's just what was working?
It was more or less the structure that they were on. Pretty much the only way you could fish it effectively, it was, you know, with a drop shot. I don't want to sound like a douche, man. I don't want the spot. If I gave up the exact thing,
hold it close
to you because God knows people will take it from you.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not a secret. I mean, it's really not.
You know, well, it's so. Secret to most of us. So no, keep your stuff, man. No problem.
But that was just the best bait for that particular spot. That was all it was.
So. This will be I'll ask both and I'll let Ethan chime in on it first, but with ledge fishing in a lot of places, current is key. As was shown this weekend, Pickwick didn't have current, which made everything tougher. Is it the same thing with chick? And just because of how you described the flats you were fishing, I know, you know, fishing flats on other lakes, when that current kicks on and off, that does change how that setup is, you know, especially if it's a funneling style area. So what's your thoughts on that, Ethan?
Well, when they're pumping a lot, they tend to go up in the secondary creeks a lot on mm-hmm. chick. And was anything above 20,000 on chick is good. Good ledge bite. If it gets above 40, they start going up in them creeks into the secondary points and all that. During practice, they were pulling anywhere between 40 to 46,000. And I think that's what killed a lot of people's bites, because the day of the tournament, they only pulled 26,000, I think. And so it repositioned a lot of the fish, and it screwed up a lot of people's plans.
It's kind of crazy how
in the numbers, watch out.
It's crazy how in the summer that, you know, a lot of people, and I used to think this way too, think summer bass, when they go to their summer haunt, it's like, that's where they're at, you know, but you learned, like you just explained, it's amazing how much that affects their shift in movement. They'll run. I heard some of the announcers from bass talking about how far a school of fish will move based on water from ledge to ledge. Like it is crazy how much that pump station affects everybody's day, day to day. That's just mind boggling.
And they'll go from like bank to the middle stuff, to the deep stuff, and then back up and down it. You know, you think about being on like a vertical bank where they move up and down, depending on something, but it's even the same thing offshore where they'll, you know, just depend on the day and the current, they'll go like, you know, horizontally to different areas, not just up and down, you know.
That's one thing back on the LiveScope talk that they were talking about. LiveScope has been a great tool for learning that, is that fish aren't moving how originally they thought. A lot of biologists are, you know, we think that they're moving from 5 foot in the water column down, you know, that in particular piece of structure. And what they're actually doing is they're staying at 5 foot, but moving off of it 50 yards over nothing. You know, it's stuff that they didn't think that traditionally they did. So I that was a cool little like nerd moment I saw the other day and was like, oh, write that down.
Even the shallow
not it's going to help bite. Me.
Even the shallow water bite, like on the docks, I've always found that if they're pulling a lot of water, they're on the front of the docks. If they're not, they're on the back.
Yeah.
Damn. See, I'm not that smart. See, you're letting me know I got a lot of holes in my game. I need to start paying more attention.
Those bigger fish, man, they'll sit up on the front side of those current breaks. It just, when it splits off like that, it provides just a real small current break. I've caught a lot of big fish, you know, on the Tennessee River, fishing the front sides of docks and islands and stuff like that. I think it's just them big girls, you know, they get in those little small areas. They don't have to fight off all the other or contend with the other smaller fish. You know, that's kind of like, you know, their little nest egg they can get in and nothing else is there.
They tend to be lazier. They don't want to fight that current all day.
Yeah.
So Justin, day one, you had 97.5. I'm sure you're looking at the leaderboard till it shut off. Did you quit fishing or did you lay up or what? How do you know how to manage your fish from day one, day two, or is it just I'm burning it out both days?
Man, I, you know, fishing tournaments for me is also, it's just as much of a vacation as it is a competition. So I'm out there all day, dude. I mean, you know, there's no going back to the ramp early for me, but, you know, so the first spot produced a limit. And I had caught a 20 plus off that hole. And then once I located the second spot, the better spot, that I culled out my four smaller fish. And then, you know, I fished it a little bit more, you know, just trying to kind of get a gauge of if there was more of a population there. But I wasn't really beaten up on it very long. After I got my fourth cull, I got out of there for the most part. And, you know, my backup plan was what Ethan was doing, was fishing docks. I had caught about a 6-pounder off of a dock on Thursday. And so that was my backup plan. There was a stretch of docks pretty close, about a mile down the river. So went over there, fished it. It didn't have the right depth underneath it. So, you know, I didn't really spend very much time there. And then just kind of went, you know, fishing some shade lines and stuff like that up until 2:30.
Ethan, how about your day one, man?
Well, my day one, I had a little bit of I was fishing the Tennessee Hammer event, the joint event too. Yeah. And that was a points event for the KBFTM. And so I really wanted to save my shallow water area after I got my limit, but I wanted to be competitive in the KBFTN Tennessee Hammers. So I continued to fish it a little bit more. And I started the day off with a popper, that Pop-R, the old classic Rebel, bluegill color. And got that 22 and a half off of it. And my whole limit came off the popper every day, both days within 7:30, 8 o'clock. And after that, I would move off to the docks once the sun got up and started heating the water. And then I would go and flip the docks with a jig and a wacky worm and just kept hitting that. I never really saved an area both days. I was really worried leading into day two that I've caught all the fish, but
yeah. You know, talking about your dock setup, and then since Justin mentioned that was kind of his backup plan, like, I don't want you to give up any of your, like, maybe your secrets to it at all, but like, what kind of depth range were you looking at relatively to, you know, like Justin said, that wasn't as deep as I was, you know, as I was needing for it to be set up. What kind of range are you looking at?
If I'm flipping or skipping a jig, I usually look for 5 to 12 foot.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I'm skipping a wacky rig, I'll look from anywhere from a foot to like 5. That's my mainly. And I look for grass. That's where I caught most of mine off of docks with grass behind it. They were coming out of that grass and eating it.
And what's your go-to jig setup? Yeah, I was about to say, what's your jig setup?
My jig setup is a Bad Boy jig, like a 3/8 ounce. That's my favorite. And either black and blue or just a classic. I'm a classic guy, green pumpkin.
Same way.
It works. Paired up with a Torrent outdoor timber crawl. That's my go-to setup. Paired it with a ALX toad face. It's a 7'2" medium heavy plus. It's got a really good tip on it to where you can just skip it a mile, and it's got the backbone to pull the big fish out of the docks. So
there you go.
I fish it the same way in Gunnersville and everywhere I go. So.
Which worm do you use for a wacky rig?
I usually use, I got two that I love, the Torrent Striker 6-0.
Torrent, I've never even heard of them.
Yeah, Torrent Outdoors. It's a local bait company.
Yeah,
I've heard of them.
Hendersonville.
Cool.
Check them out. They're an awesome. They have a few colors, but every one of them, that he don't go and make all these colors that don't catch fish. Zoom has hundreds of colors that catch the fishermen. Instead,
I'd hate to see the Zoom catalog.
Like, I would too.
Good God. Look through
it. And a lot of places even custom order stuff. Like I used to live in Clanton, and they had like a couple of colors that just they had. You know,
I'm a big believer in simple. It catches the fishermen more than fish.
I was on Tackle Warehouse the other day, and when I went to the Yamamoto Senko, because I was looking to order, because I use black and blue, green pumpkin, black flake. Yeah. That's it. And it said 127 color options, and it pisses me off because I have to scroll through 50 of them to get to just the one I'm looking for.
Yeah. And that's my other go-to wacky worm is the Gary Yamamoto. The only thing I hate about them is you only get about two fish.
Yeah. Man, I had one last weekend. I got 7 fish in a row out of it, and I like unhooked it and I just put it in the cup. I'm like, I'm gonna hang that one up somewhere. Like that one's built trophy.
Do any of y'all use that VMC, the new like it comes with the pliers with the new ring?
I
haven't used
it. I use I take a little piece of clear heat shrink a torch and heat shrink. The only thing is you got to sit there and do 100 of them all at once.
I know Big Bite, they have one of them. I think it's called the Wacky Nico, and it's got like a built-in O-ring in it. I thought that'd be cool too.
I usually just do the old school O-ring just because when I buy something new, I buy way too many of them. So I've got O-rings like coming out of my ears, but, I've learned now, like, especially with Senkos, man, like those, if they're cheap O-rings, they'll, like, if they've been in your kayak for a while, they'll shrink. and then they'll you'll go skip that Senko, and that thing will just break in half because it's pinching it too tight.
Yeah.
Hey, that makes me more mad than anything when you start with a Senko and you get back with a Ned Rig, basically. You never get back the half with the freaking Eco 8 in it either. That's always the first thing that's gone.
Yeah.
All right, Ethan, how about your day two, man?
Day two started off the same as day one with the popper. And I had my first fish within, I think, 10 minutes of the turn lines in. It was a 19 and a half. And continued on down the just a grass flat in 4 foot of water. And I caught all my limit. I caught 2 19s and a half and 18. And I caught two smaller ones. And I decided to switch to a swim bait, a weightless swim bait, just ticking it over the top of the grass. And I'd actually watch them come out and eat it. It was almost fishing it like a topwater, like a buzz bait. I caught a few like that. And then identical from day two, I saved a few boat ramps or boat docks that I went and hit on day two that I did not do on day one. And that's where I caught my two other keepers that I kept for day two total. And I caught them off of jackhammer in a bluegill color. I went over a few bluegill beds that they were spawning on, and I was like, oh, well, I seen it on my side imaging. So I cast it over there, and bam, hit one, went to the next bed, hit another, and got another one. So I ran that pattern for the rest of the day.
Just because you throw in pop R, are you old school and you're throwing it on spinning setup, or do you throw it on a bait caster with light setup?
I have a bait caster with a it's an LX Rosa rod. It's their topwater rod. Paired up with it's a Daiwa Tatula. I use about a foot of mono, like 12 to 16 pound, depending on like grass. I was using 17 pound mono, just enough to keep it the braid from hitting the hook, hanging up on the hooks.
Yeah.
And then being that it's 16 pounds, I was not really worried about breaking them off in the grass.
No.
Yeah.
You know.
There you go. Justin, how about you, man?
Yeah.
Did you get any sleep at all?
I got a little too much sleep.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was actually just perfect, man. I've learned over the years when my body, when it needs more sleep, man, I just won't wake up. So I had the alarm set for 3. That didn't work out. Woke up at 5 and, nice. I had to get all the stuff out of the hotel. Oh, yeah, it was chaos. So, you know, I'm sharing a few words and then I'm getting all my stuff out the hotel, skipped the Waffle House and, just went straight to the ramp. And, you know, I was really thinking when I got there that, you know, cause it happens all the time where people that don't do good on day one, you know, they go to the spot where they, you know, like the popular area or just a completely different area. And so I was like, man, I'm gonna get there and it's just gonna be loaded. I mean, the boat ramp was pretty small. I mean, the parking was very minimum. So, but fortunately when I got there was only 3 guys there. So that was awesome. So, get out there, and I was kind of torn, you know, whether or not I wanted to start on the first spot that I had started on Saturday or just go straight to the better spot. But when I got out there was a bass boat sitting on the first spot. So it just
decision made.
Exactly. You know? And so, you know, I'm pedaling out there and, you know,
was it a big run, like a long run to find out there's a boat on it and then a long run to your second spot? Cause that just sucks if that's what happened.
No, I could see it from the ramp. Okay. whether or not, you know, somebody was on there.
I'm not trying to give it away. Just
no, you're good. Wondering. Yeah, it was a little odd. I couldn't tell at first because there was just one little light. I couldn't tell if it was a light like on a boat dock or something like that off in the distance. Mm-hmm. And then I get closer and closer, and I could tell there was a bass boat. But second spot wasn't too far from there, so just made the pedal on down and got in there. And I gotta just give props to my buddy Brandon Palmer, man, my roommate. He had a scary amount of confidence that my spot was gonna reload, because I'm sitting there Saturday night like, dude, I don't know. I mean, these fish move around a lot. You know, I knew the current was basically going to be lack thereof on Sunday. No wind either. And that's what was helping position my fish on Saturday, you know? And, so, you know, he had me convinced. So, you know, got in there and fortunately enough, they were hungry. They were biting. But, you know, when they say things are just going to happen when they're meant to happen, it usually lines up. Because if the bass boat wouldn't have been on that spot, I would have stopped there. Because, you know, you just mentally, you know, there's fish there. I can get my limit, you know, and then go to the second spot. But if I would have stopped there first, I probably would have missed the window on that second spot. Because, man, you know, we had a little bit of cloud cover there for a little while, didn't we, Ethan? I want to say the clouds kind of lingered around a little while. So it kept the area cool and kind of kept the pressure down. And, you know, and when I got in there, man, they were fired up. They were ready to eat. So
same deal. Were you like same bait catching them, or are you having a cycle, you know, cycle through to get them going, or?
No, they were through in there with a drop shot, you know, and it really the creek channel, it, you know, I couldn't really throw it. I mean, unless I lined up to throw just coming down the pipeline of the channel, the creek itself, you know, I could have thrown some crankbaits or something like that. But I mean, I had the confidence in the drop shot. It was working on day one. And I honestly figured that on day one, with as much current as we had, that crankbaits, jigs, your traditional ledge stuff, you know, would have worked a lot better. But I think the way that it was set up, you know, the creek channel emptied out into the river channel, and you just had walls of grass on both sides. I mean, the grass in there was thick, and I mean, it was coming up to about maybe 4 feet below the surface, you know, and it was about 15 feet deep, you know, in the channel itself, but just completely bare. And so they were tucked down in there. I think some of them, because I was catching them on both sides of the channel next to the grass, but then some right in the middle. There was a single stump right in the middle of the channel that they were kind of, you know, hunkering around. But I think that they were just sitting there, just kind of nosed out of the grass, just looking for stuff to swim by in that channel, and then also on the river channel, and then just kind of coming out and eating it. Because I would catch one over here, a big one over here, and a big one over there. It, you know, they were all up in there. So I think that it was unreal. Just
so for little drop shot tips this time of year, what kind of like distance are you going, you know, weight to hook? I know it varies so much through the year and water temperature. Like what was working for you summer drop shotting?
If I can see them on the graph, then I'll try to just kind of gauge based off of the distance that they're, you know, suspended off the bottom. But I usually, I don't really get too into that. I don't throw a drop shot very much at all. I'm a bait caster type of guy, but, this rig is like about an 8-inch, separation between the hook and the weight itself.
Nice. That drop shot's always, I've always liked it just because there's like so many ways you can fish it, you know, like small circle hook and nose hook in the bait. You can use power shot rigs. If anybody watches Tactical Bassin, which I guarantee you most of us have, like those guys showed me punching with a drop shot, which blew my mind. Like, it's just a cool, versatile bait. And I always like to get everybody's take on it. There's not two people that seem to do it the same. Like everybody's got their own little something different to it.
Weights. And a lot of people go lightweight, heavyweight, different. Like I use a spin shot hook. Big, you know, like different kind of hooks, different kind of worms, and
you know, that's the one thing I don't throw tungsten on. Like, you know, tungsten and braid for contact. I don't worry. I don't know why, but like all of my confidence with a drop shot is me just making sure it just sits still, and I can just slowly come across and feel the tension. I'm not as really worried about like, oh, that's a rock, that's a rock, that's gravel. Like I don't know. I just with a drop shot, that's not what I'm doing it with. So I like. You might see me, instead of going and buying those bigger weights, I'll tie three of the same weight drop shot weights on the bottom of that bad boy and fling a freaking Christmas tree of weights out there. It don't bother me at all. Works.
I was contemplating that, man, because I was using a quarter ounce lead drop shot weight, and they were so violent with it. You know, on Saturday I lost probably I was getting low on weights and hooks, and I didn't bring in my backup hooks with me. So I go to the tackle shop, and all he had was 1/8 ounce and 3/16. And I was like, man, you know, I don't know. You know, you know how it is. You, like, you get in there, like, everything, like, I want it to all be the same, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So I was like, dude, if I have to, I'll just tie a couple of tungsten weights on there, you know?
I've done it, man. Like, I'm trying to think of where it was. Somewhere I was at, you know, the current got moving and you just couldn't feel the bottom anymore. So, I mean, I'll throw two or three of them, but I'll have 3/4 ounces of weights tied on the bottom of that bad boy just to make it hold to the bottom.
Yeah.
But I caught fish doing it. Are you like small circle hook, or are you using like a long round bin or offset shank?
I was just talking about it on my show. So this is the one that I use. It's
Katana.
It's made by Katana Hooks. It just kind of got like a kind of curvature to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gamagatsu makes one pretty similar to it as well.
Yeah.
But
sweet. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. He put down the hammer on everybody. You know, congrats, man.
Thank you.
Like you said, things line up, and that lake's the lake that it can happen on.
Yeah, I was just fishing for second place. So.
I made that comment, and I never mean that disrespectful, but I at the same time, I like to give, like, when you see something like that, you're like, no, dude's got it.
Oh, like, yeah.
It's just.
Hey, man,
yeah, that's yours.
I would not have put it past Ethan or anybody to roll up on a spot. I mean, you know, my thought was, if I could find a spot like this on Chick, there's got to be a better spot.
10 other people did too.
13s and 14 pounders swimming around in there.
That's the thing about Tennessee River. You never feel safe, no matter what you have. It's somebody can always catch. There's something stupid swimming out there. You know?
Even Brandon Lester had a on Pickwick again, just because it was a ledge bite thing too. He was even saying it because, I mean, those guys don't know because they don't see the leaderboard, but he's been whacking them all week, and he kept making the comment, we're probably not going to win this tournament. And I was like, dude, if you only knew how much gap you've put on these guys. And like, it's at the end of their day, and he adds a 6-pounder to his freaking, like, his limit. Man, we may not win this tournament, but it's been a good bite. And it's the same thing. You know, you're probably like having the best day and still like doubting it. Like, nope, Ethan's sandbagging. I know it. You know, Christine's got, you know, 25 inches of fish.
She was the only one that was not submitting fish on Sunday. She had a 91 inch bag on Saturday. I was like,
mm-hmm. Here it comes. That's all.
Then she showed up to the awards. I was like, man, okay, here we go. Yeah. But, you know, worked out.
We appreciate y'all, man. It's been an hour. We don't want to keep y'all on too long. But before we let you go, we want to give you a chance to shout out anybody who makes fishing easier for you. Ethan, we'll start with you. Start with Rogue.
Was it Rogue Fishing? Probably one of my biggest sponsors since I work here too. So they fund all my expeditions. But also I'm on Team Bad Boy Jigs. They've been really good to me. Mark over there, and he lives in Kentucky. So then Torrent Outdoors, John Nelson is the owner of it. He's been really good to me. They make timber crawls, tungsten jigs. They have a few of those. They make a stellar Ned rig bait. It's weedless. And check them out. And then I'm not a sponsor of them, but Motor Guide has been the XI3 has been a game changer for my fishing. Being able to graph ledges and the spot lock, being able to set on a ledge. That's been a nice addition. So that's everybody. My family, and most importantly, the good Lord.
So, amen.
You know.
Amen. Yep.
Appreciate it. Justin, how about you, man?
Yeah, man. I have a deep appreciation for the people that support me, man, you know, because they don't have to, you know. So I really appreciate my sponsors, and Battleborne Batteries is my title sponsor. They also sponsor my podcast, Lines In. Make lithium batteries, and you know, I was using 100 amp hour, getting like 13 miles off that thing with the motor guide, full throttle and wind and stuff. It's insane. So greatly appreciate them. And then SY Wilson and Company, Hobie dealer out here in West Tennessee. David Best is one of my travel partners, and the guy will bend over backwards to help you out and get you what you need. He's delivering some kayaks to a couple guys out in Arkansas this week. So, you know, he'll literally go the distance to take care of you. Corky's Barbecue. If you're ever in the Memphis area,
got barbecue sponsor. I like
dude, it. We're known for our murder crime out here and barbecue. So you know,
I was gonna say music and barbecue, but you're probably right. I think murder and barbecue.
And we're number one in crime right now. So
and the ducks at that hotel, wherever that is.
Oh yeah, Peabody. Yeah,
Peabody.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of good stuff, man, here in Memphis. And these guys know how to do barbecue. Corky's has been around for a long time. And the owner, he's fished some kayak stuff, so he's a good friend of mine and has supported me, so I really appreciate him. And Katana Hooks was using the drop shot hook this week. My buddy from Little Miami Outfitters makes the Proteus rods, and he's a kayak guy himself, making some awesome rods. You know, I mean, a lot of guys out here in West Tennessee have started to buy them from our tackle shop, and they just love them. So big shout out to him. And then Primary Tackle, same shop as S.Y. Wilson. And then Black Bass Tackle Industries, they a couple of guys, Jimmy Washam is one of the owners. He just won the MLF title last year up on the upper Mississippi. Him and another guy, they make some awesome jigs, spinner baits, buzz baits. I think they got, the D'Amico rig, and I mean, they're just Tennessee hammers themselves, so they know the Tennessee River. And then Small Town Bassin, he makes some killer hand poured swim baits. He used to make some 3-inch ones that I've got, but now his specialty is this 6-inch gizzard shad. It's got a rattle in the tail. It's got a big boot tail. Yeah. And when it goes side to side, man, you can hear it. And it really calls them out, even that dirtier water. It's a awesome bait. So
cool. Where can people listen to your podcast?
Yeah. So we're on Facebook and YouTube, linesandyakfishing.com. Looking to get on Spotify and some stuff like that soon, but we're in our first year, of doing the Lines In. So just been having some fun with it, just kind of finding our niche and whatnot, but
what kind of shows can people expect from that? What kind of topics do y'all cover? And
yeah, so it kind of started out as kind of a local type deal, but we've kind of expanded. We talked to guys that are down in Venice, red fishing. We talked to TWRA guys about the Bill Dance Signature Lakes and stuff like that. We catch up with some of the people that are winning tournaments and whatnot, but like we talked about before, there's a lot of competition with that. So, a lot of topics. If you want to learn a little bit about Pickwick and stuff like that, man, listen to us, cause we're always talking about Pickwick. My co-host, he has a ton of friends that have been fishing this area for years and years. So we're always, chatting with some folks that, drop some juice on Kentucky Lake, Pickwick, areas like that. So
that's my favorite lake. I'll definitely be listening.
Okay. Sweet, man. Appreciate it. Yeah.
All right. Well, we appreciate y'all, and good luck the rest of the year.
Thank you.
Yeah. Y'all have a good night. And I know I just got the banner up, but for everybody that happened to see that pop up that's watching it, go follow these guys. Follow Justin at Justin Patrick Fishing. Follow Ethan _Jet_Fishing. Guys, we appreciate it, and we will catch y'all next time.
See you guys.
Sounds good. See you later.
All right. Good show. It's cool. I can't think of another kayak tournament that was ledge one.
Josh Deal last year, the Pickwick one.
Yeah.
The Bass Pickwick. He did the same thing. I'm pretty sure it was wire to wire ledge vent. Like if man, it's so hard to find that, like a couple of spots that are close enough that are going to hold enough fish that don't have too much pressure. It's so hard to do that in a kayak, but whenever you do it, it's right.
And then on, like, I think about it on Pickwick because, like, me not being an expert, but like really paying attention in the last couple of weeks, like on Pickwick, there's just so many ledges, like, and that's where the people are. It's not. I was shocked to see so many of the pros out there that weren't with other people,
Yeah.
So, but awesome. And congrats to those guys. Killer event. Like always, got a few tournaments to go over real quick, not too many, so we'll hit them real quick. First up, the Buckeye Kayak Fishing Trail on Raccoon Creek. 55 anglers, 5 fish limit. First place, Chris Hannigan with 85. Second place, Joel Noe with 77.5. Third place, Kevin Sams with 72.75. Next up was the event that was going, or it was like a series of events going on with the Hobie on Chickamauga. It was the Tennessee Valley Kayak Anglers, KBFTN, Watts Bar Kayak Fishermen, and the North Alabama Kayak Anglers, and that Tennessee Hammer event. It was 113 anglers, 3 fish limit. First place, the man Adam Reiser, 59.5 in that one. Second place, Christine Fisher, 58.5, who, as we said earlier, third place overall in the Hobie BOS. And third place, the OG from NACA, Mr. Nate Mayfield, with 57.25. Uh-oh. He caught a donkey fish right out of the gate up in some skinny water. So congrats to those guys. Next up, the All-American Kayak Series on Lake St. Clair, 2-day tournament. 25 anglers, 5 fish limit for each day. First place was Mike Coleman with 197 inches, which is fantastic. Second place, Tyre Fletcher with 190.25. Third place, Joe Camiotti with 186.5. Moving on from there, we have the Foothill Anglers of North Carolina in Hickory, North Carolina. They had 5 lakes to choose from, 29 anglers, 3 fish limit. First place, Caleb Perry with 50.75. Second place, Gustavo Benintez with 50.5. Third place, Joseph Scarlett with 50. Next up, Southern Illinois Kayak Club on Little Grassy. Yeah, Little Grassy. That's pretty cool.
Little Grassy.
25 anglers, first place. Darren Hemker with 77. Second place, Dustin Siegel with 74.5. Third place, Reese Schneider with 73.25. And that was a 5-fish tournament. So it was a little bit of a tough bite out there. Next up was the Kayak Fishing Utah Bass Tour on Pine View. 68 anglers. First place, Cody Henley with 88.5. Second place, Bryce Gibbs with 87.5. Third place.
Say it.
Cayman Rasmussen.
Cayman Rasmussen. The best name in the game.
86.25. And that was...
I wish my name was Cayman Rasmussen. I had him on my fantasy. It's the only reason I knew he got third.
And that was also, there was a K, I don't know if it was 2 separate events, but I know that was a KBF event as well. I think it was a KBF event and a club event, but same leaderboard for both.
Utah Kayak Anglers. So
yeah. And last up is the California Bass Nation event on Lake Comanche. 36 anglers, first place, Griffith Garibrandt with 88. Kong Yang with 86.25 for second, and third place Shane Jones with 84.5. So congrats to everybody who kicked ass in the tournament this weekend. Congrats to the people that didn't for getting out there and fishing anyway. Anything to add to it, Bubba?
Half the teams that won in the KFL and the other half who had a bad day.
I saw some stuff about that too.
There's a lot of drama.
Yeah, like some missed handshakes and sandbagging apparently is, I mean, I've always thought sandbagging was a thing, but it seemed to really have showed its face this weekend in KFL.
Yeah, there was I know at least a couple tournaments, and we had like our guy Coley, I think the Sunshine State Swamp Donkeys. I always think Donkey Slapper, that's what my buddy calls a big bass, but yeah, they like Coley up. He put in like 170 inches worth of fish all at 4 o'clock. Like it was going from like, you know, the tournament was going from 12 to 7, and they're like, we were right about to get off live, and they were like, holy crap, he just uploaded like 180 inches. It was like he didn't have service. It's not like he sandbagged till the end of the day. I mean, there's
well, and that's part of it. Like, people have to think about that with kayak fishing. A lot of us go in places that don't have signal. Yeah.
Well, that one wasn't on purpose, but I think there was a couple of other ones where
it was on purpose.
Yeah, it was on purpose, I think.
But. Well, it sucks, but everybody can get over it. It's gonna happen. You're not it's following, never gonna man, stop.
Follow all the teams and follow. I'm not trying to pump up KFL, but like, there's some really fun stuff. Trash talk. I know Jigs and Biggs on their podcast. Listen to this. They're doing podcasts for the KFL once a week. And that's also where they named the weekly MVP for the North and South, and each one gets $500. Mm-hmm. But the they're having teams call in to talk trash, to leave a recorded message about the team that they're fishing against. So yeah,
that's
so
it's hilarious.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be really fun to listen to. But a lot of teams love to trash talk. It's one of the funnest parts.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, all right, guys. We thank everybody, as always, for being with us. We'll catch y'all next week. Have another great show, and we'll see you then. Peace.
Later.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures, your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs, when in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.